Pure Dog Talk is the podcast on purebred dogs. We talk to the legends in the sport and give you tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I'm your host, Laura Reeves. Today is Mentor Monday, and we have one quick reminder from your Dog Show Superintendents Association. Get your entries in early. It's a win-win. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I'm your host, Laura Reeves, and we are at the National Animal Interest Alliance Conference in Washington, D.C., and I am very pleased to be joined by NAIA board member, yes, board Marty Greer, director, excellent, board chair, look at you. Marty Greer is a veterinarian and an attorney located in Wisconsin, and Marty's going to share some pretty cool stuff with us. So welcome, Marty.
Thank you.
Give us the 411. Tell us about what you're doing in Wisconsin, because it's pretty cool stuff that you do.
Well, I'm a small animal practitioner, veterinary practitioner in Wisconsin. I've been there for 36 years. It's my only place that I've ever worked since I graduated from veterinary school. We started a practice 35 years ago, didn't really have any idea what we were doing. We were baby veterinarians. I married a classmate and moved to Wisconsin.
Nice.
So he wanted to do dairy. And at the time, the place to do dairy, the heyday of dairy was in the part of Wisconsin we moved to. He'd grown up in Wisconsin. I'd grown up in Nebraska. And we both went to Iowa State.
I didn't know you were from Nebraska.
Yeah, I'm from Omaha. So I ended up in Ames for seven years. Dan was there. And when we were in our third year, we started dating. And, well, I had two choices to make. I could either go west by myself, which is where I always wanted to go, or east to Wisconsin and stay with Dan. So we were going to go there for a little while. Well, 36 years later,
here we are.
We're still there.
Yep. And you do a lot of great work in therianology and semen freezing and all kinds of great stuff.
Right, right. I'm active with the Society for Theriogenology. I'm not board certified in therio. I decided at the point in my career that I could have done that, I decided that I would go to law school instead because I wanted to expand what I did rather than to contract what I did and do less of it. So I'm really pleased with my association with the Society for Theriogenology, but I am not a member of the American College of Theriogenology. So I did that. We do semen freezing. We do high-risk pregnancies. We do lots of breedings with transcervical inseminations and surgical AIs. We manage a lot of high-risk neonates and manage pyometras and benign prosthetic hypertrophy non-surgically and a lot of other fertility issues in dogs, primarily a few cats, but cats do pretty well on their own. Dogs need a lot more help.
What up with that?
Yeah, cats are pretty fertile without much veterinary intervention. So we don't have to help them much. So it's kind of an interesting place to be because it's an era in which some people are under the impression that we have too many dogs. We shouldn't be purpose breeding dogs. But after a conference like yesterday's conference, where we really understand the importance of purpose bred dogs, not just for people's enjoyment, but for the work that they do as service dogs and as military dogs and a number of other places, that dogs are important to us and dogs are important in people's lives. People have really changed their relationship with dogs over the last 40 or 50 years, and they've become family members and they've become a really important part of people's lives. So it's important to me that I can provide clients with the dog they're looking for, not a dog, but the dog that they're looking for based on breed, temperament, size, personality, coat, activity level, all those important aspects.
What they were designed to do affects everything in their daily life.
Exactly. So you can't get a Yugo when you really need a minivan.
Absolutely not. And if you want a Maserati, that Yugo just isn't going to cut it.
No, and we do have clients that need the Maserati.
Right.
You know, we have the client that does flyball, that has a purpose-bred dog that runs flyball. We're fortunate in our family that we're raising puppy number 6 for Canine Companions for Independence.
Nice.
We've raised 5 over the years. We started when our kids were in grade school and junior high so that we could give a little something back to our community. We felt pretty fortunate and felt like that was a great contribution. And a couple of weeks ago, I got an email from CCI, Canine Companions for Independence, and they said, hey, we've got another puppy. We're interested in finding out if you'd take her. She's going to be a breeding dog. She's a lab golden cross. Oh, and by the way, her name is Greer the 4th. So I'm reading the email going, no, 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 no. Okay, fine. So
grew the fourth. Yeah. That's hysterical.
So she came to live with us
right
over the weekend.
Right. Nice. And that particular organization is one I don't know that people know a lot about.
And it's a really great organization. They're one of the oldest service dog organizations that helps people with mobility.
Right. So people are used to guide dogs for the blind, right, or even maybe the hearing dogs. Right. But talk us a little bit, just a little bit, before right we get into your other topic.
Yeah, they used to do a little bit with hearing dogs. Mostly they do mobility and independence. So mm-hmm people that have physical limitations that are in wheelchairs or other kind of physical limitations, right, those are the kinds of dogs that they provide. So they'll pull chairs, they'll pick up things that get dropped, they'll go to the refrigerator and open it and bring you a beer. You
bring
know
me a beer. Now wait.
The essentials.
That's awesome.
They help take out the garbage, they shut the door. You know, right, if you drop your keys in a snowbank and you're in a wheelchair,
yeah,
you're done.
Yeah.
You know, you're out there in the cold with no keys, no way in. So that's the dog that keeps people able to live on their own and a lot more independent than they would be if they had to count on other people to help them. So it's a wonderful organization. It's very well run. All the dogs are provided at no charge to the recipient. The dogs always belong to the recipient, or to CCI, not to the mm recipient, but they are provided at no charge. Mrs. Schultzett of Charles Schultz Peanuts fame,
oh my goodness,
is on the board of directors and has done tremendous, just tremendous work for them. Paul Mundell is a member mm of National Animal Interest Alliance with us on the board. And he's done just a terrific job of working this organization mm to where they're so financially capable that they can provide these dogs at no charge. And for people with limitations, they really need
yeah
that kind of support.
Absolutely.
So I'm really proud to be part of
so that. So as a puppy raiser for them, like Guide Dogs for the Blind, do you have specific
oh
regulations
yes
about what you teach them, what you do
yes
with them, all of that kind
yes
of stuff?
And even though she's a breeding prospect, she has to learn all the same things
right
because they need to make sure that she's capable of producing puppies of that quality.
Right.
So it's really important to them. And they have just a terrific breeding program that's really producing outstanding dogs. So it's a great organization to look to.
Interesting. We'll definitely provide links to that on our blog post. So we'll
yeah
make sure we have that. And you have another very near and dear to your heart special project for the month of October.
That's right.
Okay.
It's our Pink Paw program. Pink Paw is our trademarked mm-hmm and our own personal at
for
our
your
veterinary
clinic
hospital
yep
breast cancer awareness program for people with dogs and cats. So cats don't get as much mammary cancer as dogs do. And dogs, it's a very high number of dogs that aren't spayed when they're young will mm-hmm end up with mammary cancer. So part of the dilemma is what's the right age to spay?
Right.
And we know now from some of the most recent research that Dr. Waters provided us.
Just yesterday.
Right,
right,
right. And it's material that he's been circulating for a while, so mm-hmm I've been reading it for a bit. But we know from that even dogs that have breast cancer still have a longer life expectancy if they're left intact, not spayed, for a longer period of time than dogs that are spayed young. So there's some really interesting
right
aspects to this that get very convoluted and very complicated. But the bottom line is early detection in breast cancer, whether it's a dog or a cat, has the same benefit.
Or a person.
In person. Same benefit as a person is the earlier you detect it and the earlier that it's addressed, the better the chances of good survivals are. So the incidence of breast cancer is pretty high in dogs. It's considered to be one of the top three kinds of cancer that we see in female dogs. But detected early and treated surgically, these dogs almost all go on to have nice, normal life expectancies. Very few dogs that I see in our practice, even in a practice we see a lot of dogs that aren't spayed,
right,
end up dying of breast cancer.
Of breast cancer.
They may right die with breast cancer, but most of them do not die of breast cancer. I can probably count about 10 dogs in my career that I've seen that have actually died of breast cancer.
Wow.
So it's not a very high percentage compared to other kinds of cancer. And we know those other kinds of cancer are reduced, like osteosarcoma, bone cancer, lymphosarcoma, lymph node cancer, and hemangiosarcoma, spleen cancer. Those are at much higher incidences in dogs that are spayed or neutered when they're young. So pushing back.
Okay, so say that again, because I
sure
think that's really important for people to hear. I want to put like a giant bracket around this.
Okay. So we know intact dogs, dogs that aren't spayed or neutered, so we're talking about males and females both, mm-hmm, have less bone cancer, osteosarcoma, less spleen cancer, hemangiosarcoma, and less lymph node cancer, lymphosarcoma, if they're left intact until they're older. The pivotal point right now
right
may be
right
around
what's
4.
What's the pivotal point?
Yeah, it might be around 4. Nobody's really quite able to say that yet, but from some of the data that was released and discussed yesterday, It was a paper published back in July with Dr. Waters talking about lifetime ovary exposure. It looks like four may be kind of a pivotal moment at which, if right. you can hang on, that you're going to end up with less cancer. Now, there's okay. also other benefits to waiting, obesity, urinary incontinence, cruciate rupture, hip dysplasia, a number of other things, but those are the three cancers that we really know about. So I really want to focus on the breast cancer because it's October,
right.
because it's breast cancer Perfect. Awareness. And I want our pet owners to be as aware of breast cancer in their pets as they are in themselves.
Absolutely.
So monthly, you can check your dog. Breast cancer is easy to diagnose for people. We don't do mammograms on dogs. We just feel for lumps. So it's pretty easy for anybody that owns a dog or a cat to just feel along the mammary chain, that line of nipples that dogs and cats have underneath their belly. So kind of starting at the armpit and going down into the groin region, you can just feel along those. And if you feel any kind of a lump there that is concerning, then you should seek veterinary advice. In our practice during October, our technicians do free exams
nice.
For clients that find a lump. And if it seems like it's something concerning, then the doctor will come in and take a look at them and we'll talk about mm-hmm. treatment options. At this point, there's just recently been one new drug released for mammary cancer chemotherapy in the dog. It's very, very early. It's just been released through the FDA. So we don't have a lot of experience with it yet. We don't know a lot about it yet. But surgery is still the hallmark.
I was just going to say surgery is pretty straightforward, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah, you feel the lump. They're generally pretty amenable to surgical excision.
Right.
Sometimes you take just the lump. Sometimes you'll take more than that, depending mm-hmm. on what the diagnosis looks like. If you need to do a mastectomy, which would be removing several glands or just the lump. And if you catch them when they're little, the surgery is quick. It's simple for the dog to recover from. It's easy for you to find on your mm-hmm. own. So on a monthly basis, when you check yourself, then you should check your dog or your cat. It's simple. The groomers frequently will find them because mm-hmm. they've got the little mm-hmm. dogs that go in mm-hmm. for grooming every 6 weeks. The groomers get their hands on those dogs mm-hmm. often, more often than the veterinarians.
Right.
So if your groomer finds a lump, if you find a lump and you're worried about it, you should just go in and find out. Not all lumps on the mammary chain turn out to be mammary cancer.
Right.
They can be lipomas. We just had one last week at our practice that came up fairly quickly, and my other doctor was concerned about it, so we took the dog to surgery. It turned out to be an inguinal hernia that had rapidly expanded.
Interesting.
So it wasn't anything right. cancerous at all, right. but the dog needed to have surgery to correct the problem. So it doesn't always turn out to be serious or right. bad. There is one form that's quite aggressive, and it's called inflammatory mammary carcinoma. I can say I've probably seen 4, maybe 5 cases of it in 36 years of practice. So wow. it's not at all common. It looks completely different than a mammary tumor. It's not a lump, a discrete mass. It's more of a rashy, kind of inflamed looking lesion along the mammary gland. And it's very aggressive.
Okay.
Those are not amenable to surgery. We might be able to see some chemo down the road that might help mm-hmm. with those. But at this point, those are very serious, and those dogs don't recover at all well from surgery. So a recommendation is if you suspect it, you biopsy it. You don't try to excise it like you do the discrete nodules. And we'll have some dogs that'll have multiple nodules that need to be excised at the same surgery, but they recover well from it. It's not an abdominal procedure. It's all on the outside of the right. abdomen. The dogs recover nicely. Cats are more serious. Almost 90% of cats with mammary tumors are malignant and very aggressive. So it's very different. And we don't have quite the same association with the age of spaying in cats as we do in dogs. In dogs, if they're spayed under the age of 2, we very, very rarely see mammary cancer. But the incidence goes up considerably. Part of the problem we have with the data is the last data that was collected on mammary cancer and spay age was done in the 1960s.
Wow.
And things have changed a lot since the 60s. In the 60s, we hardly even spayed and neutered dogs.
Right.
So it's changed considerably, and we need more recent data. So mm-hmm. if somebody out there has some
money to throw at this,
it'd be a great place to spend it, because we do need more information
right.
on where that magic age is for that.
Right.
But it's important for people to know that if they wait until they're over the age of 2, even though they've increased the risk of mammary cancer, they have actually decreased the risk of the other kinds of cancer that we've discussed. And those are the 3 that we know about. So there's probably going to be more information coming. The only breeds that we really have a lot of information on for longevity at this point are Labradors, Golden Retrievers, German Shepherds, Vizslas, and Rottweilers. So,
because they've had specific studies.
Exactly.
Okay.
Funded by their breed clubs or right. by other organizations, just depending right. on the interest. Dr. Waters did the Rottweiler work. The right. others have been done by Benjamin Hart in California at UC Davis. He's a retired professor emeritus out there and has collected retrospective data on these breeds. They're all large breeds. So interesting. We don't know about the small breeds.
Right. So do we don't have any information that says it's the large breeds that are more susceptible or any of that kind of detail?
No, not at this point. Interesting. Now, there was a study in 2012 that was published at the International Symposium for Canine and Feline Reproduction on the incidence of mammary cancer and pyometra in dogs out of Sweden. It was published from Sweden because they have insurance. So they have information in their database that we don't have because here in the U.S. we don't collect that information the way that they do in their insurance company records. Mm-hmm. So they were able to catalog the incidence of mammary cancer by breed, pyometra by breed, and the dogs that had both mammary cancer and pyometra. And those are really the only two, pyometra and mammary tumors, are the only two fatal things that we see associated with waiting to spay the dogs. Pyometra is an infection of the uterus, and that's another completely different topic that I don't want to get too far waylaid in. But if anybody's really interested, you can Google, on Google Scholar, you can find this article and you can look by breed. And I think that's important when you're making a decision at what age should you spay your dog, is if you have a breed that's in the upper 10 or 20 breeds that have for incidence, that might be a dog that you would want to spay a little bit younger than a dog that's not in that category.
Now, that's interesting to me. So you are seeing distinct differences in the incidence of pyometra based on breed.
Yes. So whoever thought that bacterial disease was really had a genetic association.
Right. That's why I'm like, my mind is now blown. I'm seriously.
Right. Because we always think of it as being bacteria that gets into the uterus and causes this disorder.
Yeah.
But there is a breed incidence, with Bernese Mountain Dogs being at around 48%. They lead the way.
Holy crap.
They are.
Sorry.
They lead the way. So it's important that people recognize that there are some distinct differences by breed. And if you're interested and you have a breed that you're concerned about, you're highly invested in that breed and you want information, hit Google Scholar, pull up the article. It's on a chart. You can look down the list and you can see where your particular breed falls. And that can help you and your veterinarian to make
a
better
informed decision. And that's something, we'll find that and get that linked up on the website as well, that particular.
Yeah, it's a great article.
And what I reference. You can send me a link to it or something.
You bet.
That'd be amazing. Because that is brand new information to me. And I am not someone like totally out there in the wilderness on this. So.
No, I understand.
This is pretty cool. Okay. All right. So breast cancer awareness. You, your dogs, and your kitties.
Right.
Check your titties.
That's right. Your kitties.
Yeah.
So early detection is important.
Absolutely.
If you have any doubt, absolutely call your veterinary clinic, take your dog or cat in, have it evaluated, make sure you're not overlooking anything important. It's so easy to treat when it's small, and it's so devastating if you wait until it's too late. That this is a disease that if your veterinarian only sees your dog once a year, you may miss. So your dog and your cat are counting on you to help make that early detection and diagnosis and get treatment while there's still an opportunity for good results to have as an outcome.
Excellent. Excellent. Thank you so much, Marty. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
All right, listeners, we are with Allison Foley from Leading Edge Dog Show Academy today, and we are going to have some pretty cool stuff for you guys. Allison and I are going to talk about all kinds of little tips that we can help you with. And she has a great one for us today on using your products properly when you're bathing your dogs. So welcome, Allison.
Hey, Laura, how are you today?
I'm great. How is Canada out there in the east end of nowhere's land?
Actually, I'm in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean and it's a little bit rainy today.
Oh my gosh.
I think we're getting some left hurricane.
Oh, hurricane. Yeah. Wow. So talk to me about bathing your dog and the products that we're going to use.
Okay, so I really loved your episode when you talked about how properly bathing and drying your dog, that's where it all starts.
Yep.
Because I totally agree. I run into so many people and I just think to myself, your dog will never look like my dog or that great dog or this dog because you haven't started with the basics. You can have the best scissors, your dog can show great, you can spend all this time training it, but if it's not properly bathed and dried, like you said, you can't have the end result. That's where it starts.
Absolutely. So give us a really great suggestion that you love when you're bathing, particularly a heavily coated dog.
Okay, so when I'm bathing my dog, one of the things that is super important is this. Use your shampoo, conditioner, deep conditioner according to the directions on the package. It seems so simple, but so many people don't do it. You know, I watch them bathe their dogs, if either people when they first come work for me or people that come to my seminars, or I'm standing in line at a dog show waiting to use the booster bath.
Right.
And they're glugging some product into a bucket or a bottle or a dog dish or something, and then chucking some water in it and then bathing their dog. Well, these people, we've spent sometimes $10, $40, $110 on a gallon of shampoo or conditioner.
Yep.
And these people that formulated how we use it did it for a reason. And I am absolutely astounded at how many times I see people actually not using the product according to directions. So I actually have a measuring cup. If it says 10 to 1 or 6 to 1 or whatever, that is how I dilute it.
Right.
And it does seem simple, but it's true. The other thing I see, so I'm going to start with shampoo. The other thing I see, especially with a heavier coated dog, is people don't leave the product on their dog long enough for it to actually work.
Absolutely. So are you saying directions, or do you have a specific time? Like you've got a color brightening shampoo or something like that?
So back in the days when people used to smoke, even though I wasn't a smoker, I was told that you would leave the shampoo or conditioner on the time it takes to smoke a cigarette.
Yep.
So that's a little archaic, but I tell people leave it on for 5 minutes.
Yep.
Right? So that's for most shampoos or a heavily soiled dog. If I am using like a color shampoo or like a deep conditioning conditioner, I will leave it on closer to 7 to 10 minutes. But I think with a shampoo, you can keep lathering it in there to make sure you're getting all the spots. But please don't just pour that shampoo on the dog and rinse it with the other hand. And I see a lot of that happening.
Yeah, I think that's a great one.
So my second trick is more for conditioners. I find conditioners, just the way they're built, they don't really mix that great with water. So you'll pour your conditioner into my measuring cup, and then I add the water. And no matter how much I stir it or mix it with my hand or do whatever, I find I still get little strings or dollops of conditioner that are just globs, right, that are floating around. So what I've done for probably the last 15 years is I have the cheapest, most beat up immersion blender you've ever seen in your entire life. And I have my immersion blender, I throw the conditioner and the water in together, and I just give it a quick 30 seconds with my immersion blender to make sure it's completely mixed together. And then I go ahead and use it on my dog. So don't go buy a fancy immersion blender, buy the cheapest one at a garage sale, at Walmart, wherever, or if you know somebody that's a really good cook, you could steal theirs and you
borrow
with Christmas time or something. But yeah, don't worry about, you don't need an expensive one, but I'm telling you, the difference it makes when you mix up your conditioner is astounding. You'll love it.
I love that. I'm definitely stealing that one. That's one I've never tried, and I'm all over it because I hate that globby gook in my wash tubs.
Exactly.
All right. All right. Well, thank you, Allison. We will hope to hear more from you coming up in the next few weeks.
Sounds great, Laura.
As always, if you have any questions or input, we'd love to hear from you. The show notes and links to resources on today's topic are available at puredogtalk.com. Drop us a note in the comments or email to laura@puredogtalk.com. Remember, guys, this podcast is for you. So if you want to know something, give me a holler. We'll do a podcast for you. If you wouldn't mind, you could help me out here. Take a couple minutes to visit iTunes and give us a review. This will help share the love with others out there in the sport. This has been Pure Dog Talk with your host, Laura Reeves. We hope you can join us next time as we continue on the journey to success with your purebred dog.